Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Sellers Park on the horizon. All your build up to Crystal Palace away starts right now with your pre-match warm-up. You've got Ian Ryan, Grace Mealy, Fuad Hassan, Jake Nolan, Andy Heaton producing as well. We will get a caller. It will be Robbie Scotcher. But Jake, we sat on this show last week before Fulham and we spoke about the need to get 9 points from those three next games. Liverpool are very much on track to do that. It wasn't pretty at Sheffield United last night. A lot of grit, a lot of graft, but ultimately they got the 3 points and that's what mattered.
Yeah, nearly there, aren't we? Just one more to go. I think it done me head a little bit, to be honest with you, in the way that people kind of writing off last night as if it was just like a shoo-in, you know, like an easy 3 points win. I reckon Sheffield about 7 o'clock last night wouldn't have been a nice place to go and play footy. I reckon they'd have been pissing down, the wind would have been blowing everywhere, everyone would have been pissed up and on the ale from about lunchtime. I reckon them all getting behind Wilder, so I don't think it was an easy game at all last night, and it's just important that we came through it and looked good at times.
It did good look did look good at times, but at times I thought it also looked a little bit messy, a little bit sloppy, one or two weren't at the races. But ultimately I thought the captain, Virgil van Dijk, came to the party. He's been imperious. And again, last night, he looked head and shoulders above anything else on the pitch.
Well, he literally was when he scored that goal, wasn't he? I can't believe that's his first goal this season. Feels quite odd, yeah. Just strange.
Half ball as well.
Yeah, feels odd. At no point in that game did I think these 3 points are secure. I just think they've made Sheffield United have got a new manager. They loved Chris Wilder when he was there before. They obviously really wanted him back, and you could tell that pre-match. Like, Chris Wilder was up for it, the players were all up for it. It was a really young side that he fielded, and you know, it's quite all right. We're Liverpool, and we've won our last few games, and we're not in the position that Sheffield United are at the bottom of the table. But they were well up for it because of what they need to do to avoid going down, and they don't want to go down. And that is Chris Wilder's mission, is to make sure that they stay up and they don't go down, which seems like the writing's, or as he said yesterday in his pre-match interview, the writing's already on the wall for Sheffield United to go down, he feels, and that's his job, to try and keep them up. I know that we've gone goals down in games before and pulled it back, but I did think if these get one, then they'll probably get another, and then we'll be in a sticky situation. When we were winning 1-0, I was thinking, oh, you know what, like, we need another one here to try and shore it up. But then I feel like the second half just didn't really get going for me. Like, it just was quite steady. And at times I was a bit like, this is just long-winded. But Virgil, as you said, so important to our side. And I think at times he goes quite under the radar. Like, when we first signed him, we were like, oh, what a player Virgil is. And in the year we won the league, we were like, how amazing is Virgil van Dijk? And then some of the challenges he makes are really, really important. But I don't think they get noticed until a big game where we need him to be massively on it defensively.
I felt he was dragging one or two up to his level, Fuad, last night, I thought. I think there's quite a few players who do okay at times, but there's also times you look at it and you're thinking, I'm not too sure about that. I think Trent at times looked quite good in terms of trying to force it. obviously gets the assist with his arse hanging out, which was a new one.
Not for me.
I've seen your team, lad. Definitely not a new one for you. But there was times when Trent was found wanting a little bit defensively, and you could see Virgil visibly really having a bit of a pop to say, no, that wasn't good enough. You need to be at it a little bit more than that. I felt he demonstrated lots of those leadership qualities across the 90, really, not only in terms of his own performance, which was, as we said, imperious, but in terms of just sorting out others. It felt like a proper captain's performance to me.
Yeah, totally. In the ground, it felt nervier than it was when you watch it back on Match of the Day and you see the highlights and you realise that, you know, they get in a couple good positions, don't they, Sheffield? But really, they're so toothless in that area of the pitch, aren't they, in terms of any sort of conviction when they get in the box or around the box. And you just felt, even in the ground, you felt if they are going to get anything, it's going to be through Liverpool giving them gifts and giving the ball away in bad areas. And like you say, that did happen with one or two. I thought, you know, Gomez had a couple of little moments as well, didn't he? And you're right, the captain sort of stepped up and raised the standards. And this is the thing of having these experienced players now in this new Liverpool side. It's the ones who've been there and done it, who you expect to sort of drag others up when they need to be dragged up. The ones who've been through this period a few times now and know how to sort of deal with the churn of fixtures. I wasn't expecting Liverpool to go there and dominate and score 5, 6, 7 goals, no matter how poor Sheffield are. I thought it was going to be one of those games. And that's all you need in this period is to do the business and come out of it. You know, you don't need classics, you don't need thrillers at this stage. We have enough opportunities for that later on in the season. So yeah, I thought the captain was brilliant. It's a game where, you know, set pieces come into you know, real importance. Salah almost gets one as well, doesn't he, through a corner. And Liverpool do that a lot, don't they, when they win the league in that season. There's a lot of games where set pieces sort of open up a low block and open up the scoring for us and create that comfort. And as the second half went on, it felt like the mistakes, you know, they became less, they got cut out, and you're right, that's probably through the captain sort of raising the standard. But Liverpool sort of dominated in a subtle way almost, where they just sort of kept the ball when they needed to, and they had gears to go up if they needed to in the end, and it was nice to get the clincher, wasn't it? It was a good little moment in the away end.
It was nice to get it in that fashion, Jake. The other thing that happens last night, there's some news post-game about Joe Matip, and again, we spoke about him last week.
Kiss of death,
I know it was the kiss of death. And he's been on this almost this resurgence where you're thinking, wow, I didn't quite see some of these performances still being in the locker. And then he gets the injury and then it breaks that he's going to be out for the whole season. He's done his ACL. It could well be his last kind of ever appearance, I suppose, that game against Fulham for the Reds, given where he is with his contract. Just such a massive shame, not only for us as a club in terms of what he was contributing, but for him to go out potentially that way, and for us as fans as well. I was enjoying watching him play.
Yeah, story of my life, that. I mean, if I ever give anyone praise in this room, make sure you jump under the table. But no, mate, I'm gutted, and, you know, I think the two things are linked, actually, in the sense that, you know, we've just been talking about Virgil there becoming captain, becoming a leader, and I've been thinking, just because I know a little bit how dressing rooms operate and things like that, you know, it's interesting that since Virgil's become skipper, Joel's kind of come back in, and Joe Gomez's been doing a little bit of left-back. I wonder how much he's kind of... the manager's leaning on him for advice there, because they're two of his mates, really, aren't they? You know what I mean? And I think that's really, really interesting. But no, mate, I'm absolutely gutted, not least for on a sort of human level for Joel and you know the lads there. But I think ultimately for the time that we're in now, going into a run of games as well, he's a person that, you know, we needed, really. And all of a sudden, you know, we've gone from having a stacked centre half, where we did worry a little bit about the history of injuries and centre half, and we spoke about it last week, to now thinking, oh, we're Joel Gomez injury away from being in the shit here, really, and this is the time, really, of the year when you don't need that to happen. We need all the lads fit and firing and there and available, because it's the difference between winning shit and not winning shit. It is how fit you can keep your players in key times and key areas, and it'll be the defence that wins you the league. It won't be any of the, well, it will be the position, but more importantly, the best defence in the league wins the league. That's always been the case, and it's always been the case in my book.
It does feel like they may be in a little bit of a tricky situation now, Grace, but just on Joel Matip, when I was writing the agenda this morning, I thought to myself, I almost want to dedicate a little bit of time in the show to him, because he's been such an important part of Jürgen Klopp's Liverpool. And I don't think you can underestimate the contribution he's made. You know, even in the Champions League final against Tottenham, he's one of the best players on the pitch, I think, that night. There's just been times where he's been absolutely brilliant for his football club. His partnership with Virgil has been exemplary, I would say, a lot of the time. And don't get me wrong, this is not me saying it's always been perfect. There's obviously been games where he's maybe fell below his very best, and there's been times where he's missed parts and chunks of seasons through injury. But over the course of those 6 or 7 years, you would have to say he's made one hell of a contribution.
Yeah, well, he's been the contributing factor. He's been the constant throughout. And, you know, the players that get mentioned in our side, like Salah, Diaz, the goal scorers get mentioned, and your defenders are often overlooked. And Matip is one of them for me. He's been defensively solid throughout. And I just love, like, so I sit row three in the Lower Kenny, and it's actually so good to listen to him because he's way
more...
You must
be fucking freezing, by the way.
Well, yeah, I was, but I enjoy that seat, so it's all right. But how vocal he is, and how he never used to speak. He just used to stand there and let Virgil tell him what to do, and now he gets involved. He's constantly shouting, they're constantly communicating. You know, when he goes on them runs, and he just runs and runs and runs, and you're thinking, oh, don't hit it. But equally, you'd just love him to get a goal. He's been a constant throughout, and he's not really got the mention that he deserves. I would say now, I am, although I'm gutted for him, and I really hope it's not the end, I hope he does sign another contract.
Definitely.
The other part of me is like, I feel more comfortable now that I'm getting injured now than a few years ago when we had no options. I think Conce has been a decent player for us. He's really showing what he's capable of. You look at Konate, I think Konate's made some solid blocks in like recent weeks when he's played. So I feel better now than if he was to have got injured like 2 seasons ago. Do you know what I mean? And I think although he's going to be massively missed, and yeah, all right, we are probably one injury away from disaster. I think where we're at now, I'm more comfortable with than if, say, he would have got injured that season, Van Dijk was injured, and we had literally no one. Like, we are in a better position now than what we were.
Final word on Joe Matip, who had... Football's obviously a very, very ruthless business. The nature of the injury means that he's probably still going to be recovering when his contract's finished. It's probably going to go into next season. Do you think, because of the servants he's been, there might be a sense that the manager might just push for a year to let him recover on Liverpool's watch, knowing full well that if you can get him back to where he was fitness-wise, there still look to be a footballer in there capable? Or do you think it might just be, listen, it is quite ruthless, and unfortunately it's going to come to a natural end? How do you think they might view it, or is it just too early to say at this stage?
I think it might be too early to say. To be honest with you, I don't know. It is really tough to call that, because I think we haven't really seen that situation before, have we, with this manager and any of the players. When players have left, it's been because contracts haven't been offered, like, you know, Gini Wijnaldum and others. It's not been a case of an injury like this happening and it being a, you know, you don't know what the manager's full plan is.
Do you think he might have got one if he hadn't got injured, is another way of kind of putting the question to you? Do you think that was almost in someone's mind? Because I think I put it to Jacob a few weeks ago.
He must have been chatting about it.
Because he was playing well.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, he's not that old.
No.
How old is he?
I think he's probably only about, is it maybe 33?
Yeah, 32, 33, something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so there is a bit left in there. And I think what he offers us is quite unique compared to the other centre-halves. I think, you know, what Grace was saying about the little runs, that his ability on the ball, you know, he gets chosen for that City game for a purpose. And to be honest, without him for at least the start of it, I don't think we'd have had the kind of composure we had at times when we needed, you know, people to put their foot on the ball, you know, play the short pass, be a bit bold as well. You know, he creates that chance, doesn't he, with his little run that Nunes gets the header off from. So I think his skill set is quite unique. And unless they've already identified, you know, someone else to come in, it's hard to see how you sort of just replace that. I think Kwanzaa's great. I think he's got a big, you know, he's got a big future, obviously. But, you know, it's another thing throwing a centre half like that in at that age and expecting him to do it, you know, game after game consistently. And we've seen that Joel's been able to do that over a number of years and over a consistent period with Liverpool being successful. So it's a really hard one to call. That, you know, your heart says yes, let's keep him around, because he is one of the sort of the OGs, if you like, of this Klopp team, and he's one one of those that, you know, everyone sort of loves. You can tell he's popular in the dressing room, and as Grace is saying there about him being a leader, that's, you know, that's something I didn't really know. I can't really tell that side of things from where I sit. So it's good to see that side of his game growing, because you need that in that position, don't you? And it feels like the manager's made a very clear point when he's played him this season that, you know, he does have a lot left. So without this injury, I would have been quite confident he would have been offered another contract. Now, if it is in the manager's hands to offer him another contract, I don't know, because we've seen that before, haven't we, where, you know, it was pretty clear he wanted Wijnaldum to stay, I think, but obviously to a certain extent, and the powers above him sort of made that decision for him in the end. So it might be another case of that.
Did you see that thing doing around on Twitter the other day where it was like, pick your best 11 in your lifetime from your football team? Yeah. And I've seen like a lot of Liverpool ones going out, obviously, from people I follow, and a guy did mine. And I mean, not that I spent too much time with, but I was sat for a couple of minutes thinking, you know, you've got, obviously, Virgil goes in, but you've got Carragher. It was the obvious one. And then I ended up putting Danny Agger. But after I posted it, I remember thinking, I should have put Matip in. Like, genuinely, and that is how much you could say he's been underrated, how much he's contributed, and he doesn't really get. It's, you know, you look back at so many big games and so many good times under this era of Liverpool, he's been a constant. And it's funny that Grace mentions him being a leader there, because I mentioned on when we did this last week, you've seen Van Dijk step up quite obviously becoming captain, but you're seeing sort of Trent and Salah go with him. But then I think just under that, you've got the other sort of Robinson, Matip, and you can see them kind of stepping to the fore. And, you know, that would be another reason why I'd keep him around, even just for another year, just for the vibes. You know what I mean? just keep him around for the vibes. Not costing us anything.
They like winding him up as well, don't they? So.
He is still only 32. He turns 33. In August.
You've just been on his Tinder profile.
I like to be back to it, mate, you know what I mean? Grace, another club who do have some injury problems are this weekend's opponents, Crystal Palace. They are missing some key men. They look a little bit of a mess to me as well. They get beat at home last night. I think Roy Hodgson comes out with some strange comments.
Yeah. Not like him, is it?
You're pretty much along the lines of you've had it too good for too long. Along those lines, at least, paraphrasing slightly, but they do feel a bit like they could be there for the taking. And you don't want to get too carried away, and people can raise themselves, and it's another half 12, all that. But missing people like De Corey, I think it is, isn't it, who's out long term. I think Eze's out. I think they've had an injury to Mitchell as well. Yeah. So it feels like there's a number of key players that just aren't going to be available. It might not be the worst time to play them.
No, I don't think it is the worst time to play them, but I literally say this on every pod where we come on and we say, oh, you know what, like, oh, it's a nice time to play them. No, complacency. Liverpool players, if you listen to this, do not be complacent, because I don't need it in my life. Because we go to sides and think we've got it won, and that's just not what happens. So I don't think we can see it as that. I think from what Roy Hodgson said, wow, to even make them comments is just bizarre. But it either winds your fan base up to the point where they come out and they're right behind the team and they're going for it, or they go the other way, they booed them off the pitch. That's why he made those comments. So, you know, they've not won at home since the start of September. They've not kept a clean sheet at home since before that. So you'd like to see us go there, score a few goals, get a nice little win. But I don't know. You just never know.
It feels like it could be a bit of a bastard though, doesn't it?
You know,
like a bit of that's my thing. You know, I'm almost a bit like, you know, if he did have those players available, would they be trying to play a little bit more? You know, would they come out a little bit more in front of their own fans? I know Hodgson doesn't do that, but gives them the incentive to at least go and try and do something where you can perfectly see a scenario where he's there with a Big Ray, his mate, sitting there going, right, let's just get everyone behind the ball here and make it a dogged game for Liverpool, you know what I mean? And you know, it's one where you either drop 2 points or, you know, you're on the break and you could be looking foolish. And I think that's what the manager was kind of, maybe it was on his mind last night when he had a bit of a cob on with when the fella asked him the question about the 12:30, because it has got all the kind of ingredients of being a little bit of a banana skin, I think, and that's why people don't take into context sometimes when you just see a game and they go, oh yeah, that's an easy game, it's 3 points. Sometimes you're playing against the context as well.
I'll stick with it on that, Jake, because the manager was definitely in a rougher guy about 12:30. No, he was having none of it.
Channeling Andy Eaton, wasn't he?
Yeah. Do you know what? I noticed that Andy Eaton's producing, he's desperate to speak. I saw something on Twitter today where it was almost, there was a few comments about maybe the manager just needs to understand that it was, you know, a little bit of a joke. But I am going to side with the manager on this, because we, you know, it's, he's been on the end of a lot of these.
It's the context of Joel as well, though, just getting injured.
He knows that, but it's also, he's in the heat of battle here, where it is every 3 or 4 days. And from his point of view, he's probably looking at it thinking, I can't believe we've got another half 12. And I know Crystal Palace have got to go again, but it's the sheer amount of times Liverpool, quite often on the back of an international break, and I know it's different this time, but quite often it has been on the back of a break where we've been asked to go again. You know, sometimes, lo and behold, there's no 12:30 game. You think, yeah, fucking hell, okay, hang on a sec. So I can understand his frustration, and I think that just maybe comes out a little bit last night. And by the way, you're catching him right after the game when he's probably just watched Liverpool play in the cold. He's watched Liverpool play and
probably about the 8th interview he'd done with different sorts of national media channels.
They certainly didn't execute exactly what he was after last night.
No.
There was parts where it was okay, but there was parts where it was sloppy and a bit not quite what he was after. I'm sure that'll be in his thinking. So to get asked the question, or to get a throwaway remark at you about a 12:30 when you know you've got to head back home, you've got to get ready and prepare for the game, you can see why that frustration does seep out a little bit.
Yeah, massively so. And even as a supporter, you know, somebody who, I don't go to every game, I go to as many games as I can with my own sort of schedule. Sometimes it's hard to keep up, you know, when you're playing, where you're playing. You know, when you look at leagues across Europe, it's only our leagues that's kind of sped out like that. And, you know, I can go full on cosmic and tin hat about this. You know, we've only won one Premier League since Sky Sports came about. That's because Sky Sports put all our fixtures on mad times, because most people want to watch Liverpool. It's that kind of simple for me. You've got more fans across the world than most. And I don't blame him, because what's the stat? What are we, like 8th we've been on 12th, and the next one behind it was like 5th or 5 times they've been on 12 o'clock, something like that. It's absolutely ridiculous. And you know, and it's not just, oh, shut up, yeah, you can get on with it, it's a couple of hours, because it's fine margins whether you win stuff or not. And you're seeing his lads getting injured. You know, we've had Virgil ACL, we had Joe Gomez, now we've got Matip. It's not a fine line, and we don't have the resources against some of the teams that we're competing against to swap and change between 4 to 5 players with there's no drop off. You know, we need our lads, and we need them playing all the time, so we need all the time they can get.
The other thing I would say is, it's your match day preparation. Like, you're playing at 12:30, your day's preparation is completely different to if you were playing at 3 o'clock. It's the different time that you eat, it's how much sleep you get in the night before, it's all of that. It's not just a case of we're playing 3 times in a week here. It's like we're constantly on that, what feels like that 12:30 rota, and it's just not getting any easier, is it?
No, and that's where I back Liverpool, actually. And I think that's one big advantage that we have in this one, because Palace aren't used to the midweek to Saturday sort of turnaround, are they? It's not like it's Liverpool playing in a European game and Palace have had the whole week to prepare. We've been in the rhythm of this a little bit, so we've got the kind of the evidence, we've got the processes, hopefully by now we've got the squad. You know, I back the squad to any, whoever comes in, to be fresh, and even the ones who've played to sort of be in a better state than those Palace players. And especially if you're low on confidence like they are, especially if you're not been having a good time in your own ground, you know, it's hard to expect the fans to suddenly turn up on that occasion at a 12:30, especially if it was a bit later on. You know, if it was a 5:30, maybe Liverpool would be at a bit more of a disadvantage. But I think this is one where we sort of have the advantage of having the rhythm of playing in these sort of games.
I think that's a fair point, Phil, and I'll stick with you just in terms of what you're thinking the approach might be. I mean, it would be nice to almost get a game against a team in the bottom half where there's no jeopardy.
Yeah,
it feels like that's what we might have been striving for. So we're heading to kind of the Sheffield United game. You're thinking, in a perfect storm, you just want a kind of really kind of comfortable 2 or 3 nil, but it goes 2 or 3 early and you just know the pressure's off. But it didn't really feel like that. Even though they weren't threatening a lot, you felt that something mad just could happen. Yeah. And there's that little Canate push where I don't think it's a penalty, but they made a bit of a big deal of it on commentary. He gives them just probably a slightly unnecessary touch where if you get a really, really poor ref, you might just look at it and do something mad. It did feel like one of them. Listen, I didn't think it was, but you've seen soft decisions given before. You don't want any of that at the weekend in terms of jeopardy. You want Liverpool to be able to go into the game and just control it, show loads of maturity. Do you get a sense it might be a game like that? Or do you think we're in for one of them where it could just be a bit of a seesaw again, and it could be one where you're just hanging on in there and thinking, well, yes, maybe we're ahead, but you're hoping Palace don't show any kind of teeth?
Yeah, I think that's the difficult thing, because we've had our thriller in the Fulham game. Like, we don't need any more for a little while. I think that's sort of the one that they need to sort of make sure is its own thing in isolation. And it comes back to the thing of giving gifts away. I think the only way Liverpool cause problems, give the opposition a chance, is if they give them gifts and they sort of, you know, make the problems themselves. So I think going into it, if Liverpool get a lead, it's going from that 1-0 to 2-0 quickly and killing the hope, because it feels like it's one of them where if you give them encouragement but we get the goal, you know, that ground will be silenced, that ground will be really flat, those players will be quite flat as well. So Liverpool can kill hope very early on, but the key thing I think is not to give them any. And you know, that's not necessarily by creating chance after chance, because it's hard to expect that when, you know, they're playing so many games that they are in sort of the beginning of this period. It's more of a case of dominating in the right areas and controlling the ball and you know, doing that thing that we always talk about City, you know, resting on the ball when they can and choosing their moments to go for them. So maybe set pieces will come again as a big thing, and that, you know, I back that Liverpool team to sort of, you know, win their battles all over the pitch, because I don't think even on paper that Palace side is very good.
All the motivation should be there, Grace, as well, because by half two, you know, they could be top of the league. And yeah. I think, yes, it's still relatively early, but you are approaching Christmas now, and Arsenal obviously will play later in the day, but we know they've got a tough fixture against Europe's best team at this moment in time, Aston Villa. So that's not an easy one. And then City go to Luton, and yes, you'd expect them to win, but Luton have been proven a more difficult opponent over recent weeks than they were, say, maybe 6-7 weeks ago. Liverpool have plenty of motivation to go into this game, because they could find themselves top by half two.
I think every game in this Christmas period is a must win. I think every game from now on is a must win. You look at the league table, you see City drop points to Villa. Villa look like they're well and truly challenging, and I don't think they thought they'd be up there. So I think they're just running with every opportunity. I do see us winning it. What I will say is Palace can be targeted from set pieces. So their first goal that Bournemouth scored in midweek was from a set piece. He left the man completely unmarked, and then they got in and scored. So, and we've seen what we can do from set pieces in recent weeks. So I think that is one area where we can target them. I think Palace never dominate possession either. So, you know, they'll just be looking for any opportunity to get the ball, and they might play the usual Roy Hodgson style of football of let's just defend, park the bus and wait and see what happens. But yeah, to be honest, I think if they go into it with that mindset of this is a must win and we could be top of the league by the end of this game, or, you know, by half two, well, depends on how the other fixtures go, you just have to go into it full throttle and not be complacent. Don't be complacent, everyone.
I think the interesting thing with being top at Christmas, you know, if we can, and being top on Saturday, is the players who've still around now, and Jürgen, who've won the league previously in the couple of years ago. The only way they knew how to win the league, the only way they've done it is by leading pretty much the whole way out. And that's always been my thing. It's like, I don't really fancy us if we're chasing City. I just don't think it. I think the factors against it in the games, and they can just get out of sight very quickly. But I think if we can get a lead on the pack and be there or thereabouts after Christmas, I think that's our way home. That's how we can win a league.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree. I think sometimes if you're chasing and you've been on the wrong end of chasing, then
I think it
can be tough to go again.
Were we the only team to be top at Christmas one year but lose the league, not win the league?
Yeah, we were at one point. Yeah.
Yeah, we were the only team that's ever done that.
Yeah,
to give us a little bit more on what the officers might do, we've now got Robbie Scotcher.
It's John Gibbons from the Anfield Wrap with some great ideas for gifts for you or your family and friends for this Christmas and beyond, courtesy of Liverpool Football Club. On top of the fantastic stadium tours, museum trips, and the very popular Anfield Ab sale, Liverpool are now offering two new VIP experience days, which are the perfect gift for any Red. Firstly, the Anfield Experience offers a premium guided stadium tour, a Q&A with an LFC legend hosted by LFC TV presenter Steve Hothersall, where they will share personal memories and anything you've always wondered about what it's like to play for the Reds. There's live music and other entertainment throughout the day, and the entrance to the LFC Museum. And for the ultimate Anfield experience, you get all of that, plus an unforgettable football experience at the AXA Melwood facility, travelling there on an LFC bus. You'll experience firsthand the training and development techniques used at LFC to coach the next generation of Reds players. You'll also get additional top tips from the LFC legend on the day before going back to Anfield to hear more from the legend in one of the best lounges in the stadium by stepping off the bus and walking through the players' entrance before receiving a premium LFC gift pack. Both packages also include food, drinks and discount vouchers for the LFC store. Now, a few of us were lucky enough to go on the Ultimate Anfield experience, and what a fantastic day it was to be in there in the stadium with the legend, hearing his stories about what it was like to play for Liverpool with the pitch in the background was absolutely incredible. But getting on that bus, going up to Melwood and training on those fantastic pitches was something I'll never ever forget. So I was really lucky to do that. But you could be lucky as well if you want to buy yourself the Ultimate LFC experience, or you want to get it for one of your loved ones as well. What a gift, as I say, for this Christmas or any big birthdays or anniversaries coming up as well. The Anfield experience costs £150 for adults and £80 for children, while the Ultimate LFC experience with that training thrown in costs £445. However, you can get a 10% discount if you order either package before Christmas with the code AWAE10. That is AWAE10. If you put that code in on checkout, you'll get 10% off both those packages. So book now at liverpoolfc.com/stadium-tours.
Do you remember Robbie Scotcher? Are you spoiled?
Yeah. So have you been spoiled?
Have you been spoiled?
Yeah. I fill up when my granddad said, well, I used to have coal at Christmas. You should be happy with that Alba cassette stereo. I'm definitely not spoiled. God, spoiled being a Palace fan. We've never won anything. Come on. Apart from the Zenith Data Systems Cup in, you know, 94. I mean, what was that? I know he hates interviews and I know he gets spiky and he hates being asked questions, but that's your job. But don't start going at the fans. I mean, that was dreadful last night. That was as bad as it's been since we come up. I remember everyone's talking about there's one other game. Half time, we were losing 4-0 to Sunderland. And that game, that was like the end of the world. Well, we're there again.
It's a startling lack of creativity now across a number of games. And I think that's the bit that grinds on supporters. You know, it's not a one-off game. It's not one here and there. It's getting worse, not better. It's eroding. The creativity that was there is eroding, Robbie, from the outside looking in. And that is where this stuff gets incredibly difficult.
Yeah. I mean, look, it starts at the beginning of the season when we can't get our business done because we have to wait for everybody else to get their business done, for us to get a few loan deals, get over the line. They don't happen, so we've got a light squad. Elise's injured at the start of the season, fair enough. Eze gets kicked off the park at Luton. Decore goes as well for what seems like a season-ending injury. Also, last night, Mitchell goes off. That means we've lost a whole left side. So there's not a lot to work with, to be honest with you. That said, that team that started the game last night should be able to give Bournemouth a game, right? I mean, we should be able to beat Bournemouth. But Bournemouth are on form and they're playing well. We should be able to give them a game. We didn't give them a game. We did nothing, and it was so dull and so drab, and it is void of. I mean, when you go along to football, you sometimes you understand that you're watching a bit of a war of attrition. You're watching a sort of game of football where, you know, it is going to be about just grinding out a win. But this wasn't that. This was just two centre backs passing to each other without a clue where the ball's going, and no one really doing anything, no one having an idea, no one having a plan, and Bournemouth just picking us off. It was so incredibly shit.
It comes off the back of a result against a pretty drab draw against West Ham, but you're able to say, well, West Ham, they're a good side. So, you know, getting a point there is not so bad. But then a 2-1 defeat at Luton, a 3-2 defeat against Everton at home, a win against Burnley, to be fair, in there as well, but also being in October playing three league games, playing three games full stop, but three league games where it's a 0-0 at home to Forest, it's a 4-0 reverse away at Newcastle, and it's getting beat 2-1 at home by Tottenham. The point about this is, you know, to return to the spoiled theme, they are not the results that spoil you. It's fair to say all of these games are slogs, and often the slogs where in Crystal Palace aren't playing very well or creating very much at all.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's it's not all on the manager. There are a lot of situations, like the Luton game, everyone gets on the pitch, and then you know the whole plan's gone out the window in a second because people have got injured in the last minute. That does have a huge effect, and it has a huge effect for us because when you look at the bench, there's not a lot on there that's going to make a huge difference. So, yeah, I mean, when plans go out the window, it's difficult. But, you know, we've been in the Premier League a long time now. And it starts with the board. It doesn't really go down to Roy yet. But last night, that team should be winning a football match. That team should be playing a game. We had a good enough team. And Roy was standing there looking out and he barely moved. And he looked like a guy who went, that is the best I can do with what's here. I can't make a positive change. I can't change it up because everyone is in the wrong position. We've got so many injuries. This is what it's going to be like. So when he's coming out and saying you're spoiled, I think what he's meaning is there's been a lot more going on with the squad. You've had people to change it up. You've had better players. But this season, it started off all right, but it is getting worse and worse. And it's going to continue to get worse. December is going to be miserable, like properly miserable.
Why has he not had a look at the lad from Brazil?
Because when the lad of Brazil came on, but the thing is, as you probably know, after seeing Roy manage sometimes, with young players, he needs to trust them that they can do the defensive part of the job as well as the attacking part of the job. And when he's been on, Wardy at right back, last night he became Palace's all-time Premier League, you know, appearance player. Huh. And that's a game we want to forget. And to be honest with you, it's a shame. And I love him. And to talk about a player that plays for your team that's done so much and then say anything derogatory seems harsh. But it's time's over for Ward now. The game's moved on. It's so, so much quicker. And he does do a good job, but he's got a rick in him once a game. And when you've got him, and if you put the young lad in front of him, it's even more difficult. He's not getting any protection whatsoever. So Jordan Ayew protects Ward quite a lot, or will protect Mitchell quite a lot. Elise obviously does the same thing. So that's why he's not really tried him. But Roy needs to really trust a young player first before he gets any time. I mean, the reports in the club are that he's an exceptional talent, but he hardly played a lot of first-team football in Brazil. So he really is one for the future.
Okay, so when this game comes then on Saturday morning, which, by the way, it feels like it kicks off in about 20 minutes.
It is about 20 minutes, isn't it?
It's mad. There's Johnston in goal. There'll be Ward at right back. There will be Anderson and Gehi, which is a rock you can build anything on. They're good players, good partnership.
Yeah.
Presumably it'll be Klein at left back. You're not expecting Mitchell?
I don't think Mitchell will play, but I think there's a chance it'll be Riedewald.
Okay.
Because Kleine pretty much, I mean, his only pass at the moment is a back pass. He hasn't, there's nothing else, but it goes backwards. That's all you get with Kleine.
Okay, so it might be Riedewald. In midfield, he's been using Chris Richards as a holder with Lerma. Do you think he'll do that again?
I think Hughes will start with Lerma.
Hughes and Lerma. And then the three in front, Elise, who's come back from injury looking pretty sharp.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then Schlupp and Ayew. Is that what you're expecting?
Yeah. I mean, maybe Mateta. Mateta can be a handful, and I think you've got to give Van Dijk something to think about, because otherwise...
So Mateta or Edouard up front? Do you think it'll go with Mateta?
Sorry. Yeah, I would go Mateta, and I'd probably put Edouard on the left, maybe.
Right, okay. So Edouard on the left, in place of Ayew, Schlupp and Elise.
God, it sounds dismal, doesn't it?
I think that the use of Schlupp as a number 10 is the thing that's in my mind as, ugh, I'm not sure about that. But then I also understand why he wants to keep Elise in his position where he's most effective. So
yeah, you know. Yeah. I mean, it's for free kicks and things like that. It's Schlupp was a forward for Leicester. He started his career and banged him in as a centre-forward. He was great. I think Schlupp's hit a point in his career where this is the season where Schlupp's gone, oh, the game's getting past me a little bit. He seems a bit slow at the moment. He doesn't seem to be able to turn his body around quick enough. It's not all, because the back four, if the back four have a really strong game at the weekend,
yeah,
then it gets the crowd going and there is something to build on. And don't get me wrong, Elise can get the ball and can score from anywhere. Set pieces, I think there's a chance in set pieces. I know
Lerma's a good player. Lerma's a good player.
Yeah, Lerma's a great player. And this is clutching at straws a little bit, but Alisson's not in goal. I mean, when the times I've seen Alisson at Selhurst Park, he's probably been the best away keeper I've ever seen at Selhurst Park. It is ridiculous. So there might be a little bit I wouldn't say unnerving because he's a great keeper. Is it Kelleher? Yeah, I think he's a great keeper, but maybe they're not used to each other in game situation. Maybe there's a chance that we can take advantage of that. It's not all doom and gloom, but Liverpool look great at the moment. And yeah, I mean, look, it's the night after, and I'm just bloody miserable today.
It's a real shame, Robbie. Let's get back over and put Robbie out of his misery.
It is the Anfield Raps Free Week. I am Neil Atkinson, and through this week I am hoping you will hear enough to want to subscribe to the Anfield Rap. In subscribing to the Anfield Rap, what you do is you support us to be able to do many of the shows, some of which are for free, that we do over the course of the year, and to be able to do them to the best of our ability. For us, it's a pleasure and a privilege to get to represent the city from the heart of the city. That's where we do our business. And we have so many different contributors who come from right the way across the city, but also across the football landscape as well. It's a pleasure to work with them. It's a pleasure to work for you. Hopefully you'll take the opportunity to support us once this free week is finished. It's theanfieldrap.com/subscribe. It's through Patreon. It's on the apps, whether you're on Google or Apple. Please sign up.
And good stuff there from Robbie and Jake. Just in terms of what we might see from a selection and personnel point of view, the manager might have some decisions to make. We know it will be Kelleher again in goal. We don't think Alisson will be back till maybe the Manchester United game. I thought actually just on the goalkeeper, he does better.
Does
he
job.
Didn't have loads to do, but I think Andy was talking leading up to the game about maybe just needing to make a half-decent save or an important save quite early on. He gets that moment, doesn't he, where he can make that save. It's not an unbelievable save, but it's a decent save. And it's one where you think he gains confidence, because not long after that, he takes a ball, which is a bit tricky. It's a long throw, I think. Might have been from Robertson. But he comes out and just almost collects it off someone's head. And I'm thinking, well, if he hasn't made that save, maybe he doesn't quite feel the confidence to come and do that. But I thought he was much more assured against Sheffield United than maybe what we've seen him in the past, certainly against Fulham.
Yeah, definitely. I think if he's honest and he was sitting with him and the goalie coaches after Fulham, I think he'd have been disappointed. You know, I've seen a few people say, you know, he wasn't too bad, you know, shouldn't really blame him for the goals and all that. But I think the problem is even though we know he's nowhere near Alisson's level, that goes without saying, really, is he's set the standard a bit higher for himself. You know, from our number two before he came in was Adrian, wasn't it? And it was a little bit like, oh no, Adrian's in goal, where I kind of feel like when Kelleher has come to the forefront, particularly in the cup competitions, we've kind of thought, you know what, we've got a really good number two on our hands here, a good young goalie who could go on to do something either at Liverpool or more than likely move on and go somewhere else. You know, there was times last season when Tottenham were sniffing around them and things like that, and you could have seen them, couldn't you? But I think against Fulham, I think he did look like he struggled, and that can happen. You know, we've seen it happen with Alisson at times, you know, not an awful lot, which is great, but keepers is a very funny position, and they need a little bit of rhythm. And I think he says in the interview, doesn't he? He gets interviewed with Van Dijk, he needs a bit of rhythm, and needs to get some games under his belt, so he'll be a lot better for that. And I think going into some big games now, hopefully Ali's back, but we need him 7, 8, 9 out of 10s, because it's such an important position.
What do you think he might do in the back four, Fuad? I think Tsimikas almost certainly comes back in, felt like he got a bit of a rest last night. Centre-half partnership, it probably will be Konate, but I think the manager might have to have an eye on just how many games he wants to give Konate. Now, he's not played loads this season, but you know, sometimes if you're playing him every 3-4 days, you do worry about him picking up knocks, so there's that aspect to it.
Wouldn't be surprised to see Quanta.
Well, there's a Quanta question
on
there.
On the ball, no possession.
There's also a Konate question, I think, just on where his level is right now. Yeah. I think he's a great centre-half, and I've waxed lyrical about him on many a show. I think he's got such a high ceiling. I think he'll go and have a stellar career. But this season, it's looked a little bit sloppy at times, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah,
where are you with him? Do you think he will partner Virgil at the weekend?
The away end was funny yesterday, because it was sort of anytime he was on the ball and you know, you made a couple of mistakes, then people were quite quick to sort of turn against him a bit. I think that's because of the standard of Matip and what we've seen from him. He's felt like he's never really got started this season, Konate. I feel like there hasn't been, you know, I feel like I haven't seen him on the team sheet for 5-6 games in a row, and I think that's been really important for all Liverpool centre halves when they are doing well, when they are building well, because at the end of the day, it's not just the individual, it's the partnership, isn't it, that Nice to sort of flourish. And I will always hold him to the standard of that Champions League final performance, you know, against Madrid. I thought he was absolutely brilliant in that, you know, our best player probably. And I feel like I've not seen him reach that level sort of since. I'm not expecting that every week, but it feels like he needs that rhythm. He needs a few games. The problem is it's hard to give him consistent games. Sort of, you know, you can't play him every game because of his injury record, because of how many games there are in this period. So it is going to be a bit dipping in and out. I think it's difficult. I think you've got to look at Arsenal and you've got to look at United as two he has to play with Matip being out and the way he is. So maybe you do say, you know, Quanta gets Saturday and you sort of give him his rest when he needs it, because not quite sure where his fitness is and all of that. But I do want to see him. I do want to see him sort of just back himself a little bit more. Sometimes he's a little bit sort of hesitant, and I think that can happen when you aren't in the team loads and when you aren't, you know, when maybe you've lost a little bit of confidence in yourself because you feel the manager's not really back to you in certain situations. I'm sure you'd have thought you'd have played that City game and he doesn't. You know, that's a big marker for sort of, you know, what is my best 11 for all those players. So yeah, I think he's got a bit to prove in terms of getting back to that level that we all know he can reach. You know, he's got all the attributes, everything is there. It's just about doing it consistently. It's just about that partnership with Van Dijk and even out, you know, even out wide when Trent does invert and things like that. Him being comfortable covering that space, because he's probably the most natural at doing that out of all our centre halves. I think we've seen when he's been there, he's managed to, you know, really do that well and be very reliable in that sense. And on the ball is the other thing. I think that's the thing against Palace that I'll be looking at with him. It's how he uses the ball and his passing, because I feel like that's been a little bit off as well.
Gracious, in terms of midfield options, the manager's not done his press conference yet. McAllister comes off, so maybe, I've not seen anything on it, whether you have today, but could be a doubt. Just look like it might be one of them where it's just a bit of an impact injury. It might be fine. There are obviously other options. I think Endo actually does pretty okay against Sheffield United. I think he probably alongside one or two others was maybe someone who you felt did himself justice in the game. How do you see that midfield shaping up against Palace?
I saw a picture of McAllister after the game. Man, he was smiling and he looked all right.
Apparently they did the stitches too tight.
I mean, that's good enough for me.
John was telling me earlier they did the stitches up too tight. That's the problem.
Really?
Oh.
Yeah.
Christ.
Wow. Well,
how's
anyway,
John though?
I don't know.
He's a medic now, apparently.
Yeah.
good knowledge from John.
I think Szoboszlai should start. I think that goal was unreal. We've seen what he can do.
I feel like he needed that goal, by the way. I think he's been on a bit of a... Listen, he starts like a house on fire for Liverpool, but I think the last maybe 3-4 weeks, you've just seen it drop a level or two to the point where you're thinking it looks a little bit sloppy at times. I think that goal, as you said, probably doesn't know the world of good.
Yeah, it's confidence, isn't it? We've seen what he can do on the ball. Like, I still remember that strike he scored against Leicester and we were all like absolutely blown away. Is this the new Gerrard? Like, we've seen what he's capable of on the ball. Yeah, it is a thing for confidence with me. Like, he gets that goal, you'd like to think if he starts at the weekend and he goes into it all guns blazing and gets another, I'd like to say. I think McAllister starts for me if he's not injured, which I don't think he is. If he was happy after the game, let's just say he's not. Endo, interesting one for me. When he first came in, I wasn't convinced. But then again, like, as I've said this in previous pods, we've revolutionised the whole midfield. We brought in 5 new players and expected them to all play brilliantly. And you know what? They've done a pretty good job. And he scored that goal at the weekend, didn't he? And, you know, again, for confidence-wise, you'd like to see him come in. You're the one... See, I really like Harvey Elliott, but you never really see him consistently start games. And I don't know if that's a thing for me where I'm like, do you give him a run of starting to build his confidence back up because we can see what he can do on the ball? We've seen him score some key goals for us. I don't know what I'd rather see.
I think this is your Harvey one, in my opinion.
Yeah,
because I think he's been a little bit unlucky, just as Gates was saying then. But
where are you playing him, though?
The other thing I was about to mention is, I'm pretty sure in saying that, Szoboszlai's 2 league goals come from when he's playing off the left of the free instead of the right of the free, which I think he was doing a little bit more at Leipzig. So maybe he just takes them positions coming inside a bit more naturally. I don't know, but that's where I would play Szoboszlai left, Harvey right. And I think the reason why he doesn't start more games is more things like set pieces and things like that, because you're a big lad short and he's kind of like your luxury midfield player to come on and pick a pass and to play in the cups, and he's still developing, still one of the youngest midfielders, so he's probably the easiest to drop. But as you mentioned before, Grace, they're not going to be interested in possession. They're not going to be interested in you know, trying to play and whatnot. So I think this is the one where Harvey can really get on the ball and show what he's about and look $1 million.
Yeah. What about you, Fu, out middle of the park? What are you doing?
Yeah, I can see the Harvey Elliott thing. I think he had to start one of these three games. I feel like, you know, he's been good off the bench every time he's come on, really made a real difference and really brought kind of that intensity and energy that we've needed at times. You know, against Luton, he does it and puts in the one bit of quality for the goal in that. So I think you've got to, for the manager's point of view, you've got to reward that, I think. And in this period, if you need these players to come in, the further we go in it, you need to give them that rhythm. And I think you're not going to get a better opportunity than this game to sort of start him. You know, Palace aren't overly physical, are they, in that area? Even that side of his game's improved, I've thought. You know, the time to seen him start in the midfield areas, he seems to have sort of gotten stronger, gotten a bit quicker into tackles and things like that. So I've got more confidence in him playing in those positions. Yeah, I think Jones has to come in as well. I wonder if he just rests McAllister and decides not to risk it. You know, just, I know the injury isn't that much or anything, but
he did spend half the game on the floor, though.
He
went down more than once.
Yeah, he did. It was a sign, wasn't it? I think I would look to sort of rest him for this one and go with Jones, Szoboszlai, and Elliott maybe.
So you're potentially putting Jones as the six there.
Yeah. Give it a go, and it'll turn into a bit more of a two, won't it? So I think there's opportunities in this one to sort of do a bit more in midfield. I just don't really back them in midfield, to be honest. I just back us with whatever we put out there to kind of win in that, dominate in that area of the pitch, partly because of what they've got and also how they're going to play.
And Jacob Topp, again, that there will be some options for the manager. I thought Gakpo didn't really, for me, kind of influence it too much. Darwin News comes on and there's lots of influence. I mean, it was interesting, wasn't it? Because he kind of comes on and there's almost like a period of a play of about maybe, I don't know, 3-4, maybe 5 minutes, maybe shorter, where it just sums him up completely. Yeah. He has that chance when he's one-on-one, you're thinking, slot this. It doesn't happen. The keeper does well, actually. He comes out pretty quickly. And then shortly after that, he has that chance where he can probably switch it and doesn't quite get it right, but wins it back. You can have a conversation about whether you think that was a foul or not. It looks to me like he won the ball. When you see it back, you think in the modern game you've seen referees give fouls.
It's not a foul in my bookie.
Because no, listen, not mine. But in the modern game, you see referees if they take a bit of the man, they tend to blow up. But he gets away with that.
I thought they were going to rule it out.
I thought, looking at it,
how shit the game.
Yeah, well, it's changed massively, hasn't it, over the last kind of 10, 15, 20 years. But then he does have the calmness to pick out Szoboszlai and all is well with the world again. He's just one of those fellas where he literally just kind of absorbs your attention because he is very much always involved in the game.
Yeah, I think if you had Cody's football brain and then Darwin's sort of everything else, I think you'd have the best life in the world. I really do it. I think that's what I'm caught with a little bit too at the moment, because, you know, like everybody else, I'm so excited by some of the things he can do and the pace and the power and the acceleration. But I think sometimes we just need a little bit more cuteness and a little bit more assurity of what we're going to get, and I really rate Cody as that. And I think he's one of them where you could probably play him in three or four positions and he'll give you a 7-8 out of 10, but he'll never thrill. I was actually really disappointed that he didn't pick out Szoboszlai first time last night, because I was like, as much as, you know, we're all laughing about it at the end and you know, I'm celebrating, I'm jumping up and down in front of the telly, I was a little bit like, we've got a league to win here, and you just need to be ruthless, especially in situations like that where they can go up the other end and equalise and ultimately your title credentials could be over. And we've seen, you know, things at Luton like that, and I think that's where, for me, he needs to improve, and he's come on tenfold this season. But we're in the real business end of doing things now, where moments matter, and he just needs to pick that off first time. And I was more disappointed in that than his chance, for example, because that can happen. But you've got to pick out Szoboszlai there, and he's unmarked on the back post.
Grace, top end of the pitch for you. What do you want to see?
Goals.
Yeah. Lots of them. I think Nunes needs a bit of target practice. God love him.
You think it will be a Diaz, Nunes, Salah, yeah, three? Do you think that's how it'll go?
Yeah, that is who I'd start. I think with Nunes, I love him because of how chaotic he is. I do love that you don't know what you're going to get. I love that drive and the fact that, like, the faces that he's pulling and the expressions and, like, the will to score. But he's due some goals. He's had, like, I think it's 9 big chances and he scored 1 goal in the last 3 or 4 games. So, you know, when you're looking at it, you're thinking he's due some here. And, I mean, I've been doing that with my fantasy, thinking, keep him in, because when he scores 3, I'll be devastated if I've taken him out. He needs a bit of... He does, again, we mentioned confidence with scoring goals, though. If he gets 1... his confidence will be well up then, and then he'll get a few more. Like, I don't think he's just going to score 1 and then not score for weeks now. I think if he gets 1, then that's it. Then he's off. I think you've got to start Salah, obvs. Dewar's 200th goal. Clearly got that in the back of his mind. Puts the pressure on himself, doesn't he? But, yeah, I think that's the way I'd go, yeah.
And a score prediction?
I think we'll beat them 3-1.
For what?
2-0.
Jake?
2-0, yeah. I fancy 2-0, yeah.
2-0?
Mm. Are you for the clean sheet, aren't you?
Yeah, I don't want to late clincher, though. Just let's get the two. Let's get the second one early.
That has been your pre-match warm-up. We will see you very soon. Thank you to all the guests. Sports Social Podcast Network.